Forget whatever plans you have this weekend because you're staying at home and playing on SpinQuest. And there's never been a better time to sign up than right now. New users get $30 coin packs for just $10. All the table games you love with hundreds of slot games and real cash prizes. That's at SpinQuest.com. SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Welcome back to another episode of Seven Deadly Sinners. We are still in spooky season, but for this episode, I'm combining a classic Seven Deadly Sinners case that also involves a haunting. It's a story of a prideful prophet and a compound left abandoned only to be haunted by the ghosts of the leader's sins, maybe, or the ghosts of the defunct mental hospital that the compound was adjacent to? No one quite knows, but this story involves fraud, underground tunnels, and a prideful comeback story. And listen, the subject of our case is by no means evil, and frankly, she does give some practical, helpful advice. But when money is combined with power and pride, you are destined to get a little or a lot greedy, in her case, leaving congregants shaking their heads and holding their hearts wondering how they could have been fooled into giving their charismatic leader loans in the hundreds of thousands of dollars, only to be betrayed, never paid back, and left wondering, was this all a scam? But the subject of our case doesn't end there. Oh no. She's got a comeback story, so blatantly prideful and unashamed that she makes Jim Baker look like he's operating his grift in the minor leagues. We covered Jim and Tammy Faye Baker back in season one, and perhaps my favorite part about his grift is that he's still at it. He didn't miss a beat after serving prison time for his con, and then upped the ante by selling Doomsday Prepper buckets of slop food on QVC and wherever helpless, aging, God-fearing Americans watch. He went right back at it and just got a little grimier. If you haven't heard that one, I'd go back and listen at some point because the art of the con runs deep in that man. And he might just remind you a little bit of the subject of our case today. Mrs. Mary Morrissey. The founder of the personal development company, the Brave Thinking Institute, an award-winning international speaker, TEDx presenter, and an author of best-selling self-help books. But before we continue, sources for this episode. Much of this research came from a comprehensive and fascinating article in Willamette Week by Janine Robin from 2004, when this scandal first broke. And then an article by The Oregonian by Jeff Manning, The Seattle Times, Wikipedia, Reddit, and Mary Morrissey's own words from her numerous YouTube videos. But Lady Morrissey didn't begin her career peddling her for-profit life coaching workshops, teacher training, and expensive Tulum, Mexico retreats. She started out as a confident, pretty, petite Beaverton, Oregon high school teen who was as impeccably groomed then as she is now as a woman in her 70s who looks pretty damn good for her age. She still has the same self-assured stare into the camera in her YouTube videos today as she had in a group photo with her classmates when she was 14. Many looked nervously off, but she's staring right down the barrel of the camera with the pride of a beauty queen, unwavering in her knowing smile. All signs were pointing toward a smooth ride to a bright future. But according to her, a speed bump in the plan would derail her for a short time, yet not long enough to permanently lose her self-possessed determination to succeed. In fact, she says it's what helped her find her true calling. And listen, I actually side with her and sympathize for how this time would have been soul-crushing and extremely difficult to navigate. However, I've done enough research that I'm pretty sure she's falling into the category of a con, or at the very least akin to a Rachel Hollis. But on the scale of a Rachel Hollis to a Teal Swan, I'm going to go with the newly not humble Rachel Hollis. Not completely bizarrely arrogant and delusional as Teal Swan, but still not humble. But I digress. Back to Mary's inciting incident of her life. She's 16. Her boyfriend is a college freshman, visiting for spring break. They are in love, likely already intimate, but this would be the visit that would change the course of her life. She became pregnant. It was the 1960s, and I'm sure I don't have to tell you how that was incredibly frowned upon then. So with no other choice, Mary and her then-boyfriend Haven Boggs got married in a modest 10-person ceremony. Mary later wrote in her first book, Building Your Field of Dreams. Mary, I think that movie was made before your book, so you can't really steal Kevin Costner's thunder. But in this book, 3 decades after pregnancy and her first marriage, she writes, quote, "My parents mourned me as if I had died. All the dreams they had had for me, graduation, college, easing into family life at a more mature age, evaporated into nothingness. I sat terrified on a hard courthouse bench with Haven as we waited for our marriage license. My mother sat opposite us on another bench, crying uncontrollably." End quote. Shunned by her school, parents of her former friends, and sent away to a delinquent school to separate her as if they might catch the disease of teenage pregnancy. Mary's life became a spiral of shame that subsequently affected her health. She went from being homecoming queen her junior year, vice president of the student body, exceptional student with soaring grades, to one day being called into the principal's office on word that the 16-year-old was married and pregnant. Upon Mary admitting to this, the principal promptly kicked her out of Beaverton High and rerouted her to Portland, Oregon's now defunct Washington High School. Mary wrote in one of her books, quote, "Apparently we weren't fit to be seen during the day." She writes of the disgraced girls and delinquent boys who became her classmates. Not fit to be seen during the day. But this incident, in Mary's words, led to her having health problems, kidney failure, and a clandestine visit from the hospital's chaplain before her kidney surgery. But let's hear it from Mary.
"And the night before, a woman walked in my room asking me, I'm a volunteer chaplain, would you like somebody to pray with you? I come 3 times a week, get the list of those having surgery tomorrow, the order of the most serious surgery first, you're at the top of my list. Would you like someone to pray with you?" I didn't really have a relationship that I felt good about in terms of a higher power or anything you might call a higher power. In fact, the religion I was raised in, the church of my upbringing, I just felt like I was being punished. I mean, clearly I was a bad girl. I got kicked out of high school. My best friends couldn't see me. You know, I'm in school with delinquents. I'm a bad girl. And so deep down, I just believed that I didn't even deserve to live, that I must be, you know, God must feel like I'm not even worthy of living and I'm going to die because of how bad I am. That was my belief. And so I did. She just simply pulled her chair next to my bed. She said, I said, oh, okay. And she pulled her chair next to my bed. She didn't do anything that looked like prayer. She talked to me. Now, this is long before there was a mind-body clinic at Harvard Medical Teaching Institute, a medical school. This is a long time before we had any understanding of the biology of belief or any of these things. She simply pulled her chair next to my bed and said, would you be willing to tell me what's been going on in your life the last year or two? And so I told her my story. At the end of which, she just looked at me compassionately and she said, Mary, everything's created twice. I mean, it was like over my head. I had no idea what she was talking about. Yeah, everything's created twice. And then she said, you know this. In fact, everyone knows this. Almost no one knows the power of knowing this. And then she said, the bed you're laying on, the nightgown you're wearing, the sheet covering you, the walls, the ceiling, the floors, all the machinery you're hooked up to. First, it had to be a thought before it could be a thing. And then she said, you know that if you think embarrassing thoughts, your cheeks are going to get red. And you know that if you think strong enough, scary thoughts, your heart's going to beat faster. And then she said, I hear how much you love your little boy, but I also hear how much you've been hating yourself. You feel like you shamed your school, you shamed your family, you shamed yourself. And now that you're thinking how everything is created twice, could it be possible that all that self-loathing, all that toxic thinking, just with huge emotion around it for a year and a half now, could it be possible that that toxic thinking has something to do with the toxic energy, the toxic disease that's rampaging your body and threatening your very life? Nobody I knew thought this way. And then she moved on and she said, would you be willing to do an experiment? And about somewhere between the fourth and fifth month after that surgery, I'm sitting in a conference room with the nephrologist, the urology head, the GP, and other people, and they're just scratching their heads saying, we have no science for why yet one kidney, and the surgeon said, I saw it. It was withered, active nephritis. You can see it. It's all nephritic. He says, we have no science for what's happening with you, but that one kidney is now functioning as a completely whole, perfect kidney. So we don't know how long this will last, but whatever you're doing, keep doing it. I didn't actually know what I was doing. I was just happy to be well, and that was so for the next 2 or 3 years until I was finishing up my undergraduate degree. I got myself right in school, got my undergraduate degree, and I took some classes that began to open up some things in me. That this didn't happen to me. That recovery, that reversal in my health trajectory didn't happen to me. It happened with me. And there were some things that I could discover if I went deeper. What was the cause of that? How do you bring that? What is the pattern by which we can actually change the whole trajectory of our life?
After surviving this health scare, Mary got a degree in elementary education before joining her first husband, Haven Boggs, in ministry school. They both graduated from the School of Christian Philosophy, and in 1980, Mary claims that an, quote, inner voice told me to take our ministry on the road. And that they did. Now with 4 children, the 6-member family traveled in a trailer towed by a checker cab, essentially tent revival preaching, going from church to church, religious centers and beyond, putting on their own brand of spiritual workshops, like the religious Sonny and Cher. Their mission was halted, however, when their North American spiritual tour took them to Alberta, Canada, where a hailstorm defaced their reliable checker cab, and upon return to the Pacific Northwest, they made an insurance claim, which changed the course of their plans. When the $2,500 check arrived from the insurance company, Mary noticed in the memo section that it said, Hailstorm, an act of God. And she decided right then and there that the message was clear. They needed to start a local ministry in Oregon. An act of God, or another scam in the long line of Mary's scamming history. Who knows? But regardless, Mary used the insurance money, and her and Haven bought a banner with the words, The Living Enrichment Center, and they began renting various temporary establishments for their ministry. A ministry that wasn't fire and brimstone, shame and dogma, but more fluid, incorporating teachings from Gandhi alongside the more traditional words of Jesus. It was said by a local parishioner that people almost went every Sunday to worship Mary more than the theological God. Mary was their God. And Mary was at one time Haven's God. Until after 26 years of marriage, Mary called it quits and moved on with her second husband, Edward Morrissey. Haven, who is a family therapist, claims that Mary was seeing Edward while they were still married, and he was blindsided by the whole thing, stating, "I guess I never really knew her." But Mary, steadfast in her determined dreams, didn't miss a beat. And with her new certified CPA accountant husband, she expanded her ministry business. And in 1992, purchased the compound that would eventually be the downfall of her second marriage, causing her husband, Edward, financial ruin and Mary, well, just another small hiccup in life before she bounced back once again, leaving many people in her wake. But the LEC compound, the Living Enrichment Center, had over a decade of glory days. Calling the LEC a megachurch doesn't even begin to describe this 94,500 square foot building on a forested area of 95 acres. Over the course of its existence, the congregation grew from less than a dozen to an estimated 4,000, making it the biggest New Thought church in the state. She presided over one of the biggest congregations in the Portland metro area, in a compound that had a swimming pool, a bookstore, cafe, coffee shop, namaste center, a kindergarten, and an elementary school, and an outreach television ministry. A quote from a local said to Willamette Week, "It's a wide open religious market, and if you have a charismatic leader who puts on a good show, people dig it." And Morrissey definitely puts on a good show. As one observer put it, quote, "People don't come to worship God. They come to worship Mary." Morrissey is no fire and brimstone evangelist. She has a sly, sometimes self-deprecating sense of humor and tells stories, some personal, some from non-Christian sources to make her points. On Easter Sunday, wearing a dove gray suit whose color subtly plays off the purple banners hanging behind her, she used Christ's resurrection as a metaphor to talk about rolling away the stones that keep ordinary mortals from reaching their full potential. And because Mary likens herself to Christ, apparently she's not a mere mortal and doesn't make mistakes herself. Mary Morrissey changes the blame with the wind for her huge debt. First, it was the size of the compound. The mortgage payments became too much. Then it was being too positive about the church's future success. And then it was her husband, Edward Morrissey, who somehow, without her knowledge, went behind her back and managed to misappropriate over $10 million. I mean, that scenario never makes sense to me. Unless a couple has, like, lost communication, one's living on an island with no cell service, and then the other's on the mainland, and they don't link any bank accounts or really even speak. The significant other knows something. Someone knows something. $10 million is not just something that you don't notice. In November of 2004, Mary admitted to congregants that the debt of the church was $600,000. Then in late February, it rose to $15 million. A month later, it was $20 million. Hey. According to the 2004 article from Willamette Week, quote, "So far, congregants haven't asked, at least not publicly, why the church owed more than $10 million on property that it had purchased in the early 90s for less than $3 million. There have been capital improvements, to be sure, but not $7 million worth. The largest portion of the remaining debt, $8 million, in parishioner loans, also has puzzling aspects. Although $6 million of the money was loaned to Morrissey personally, all of it was intended to be used for the nonprofit church. But Morrissey has acknowledged that some of this money was instead diverted for the for-profit venture New Thought Broadcasting that was run by her and her husband Ed. The company, which aimed to make New Thought material available online, and it closed its doors in mid-March 2004. But then there's the issue of Morrissey's pay. In March, the congregation was told that the debt includes more than $600,000 in unpaid compensation owed to Ed Morrissey, her husband. Mary Morrissey, they were told, had agreed to waive a comparable amount of unpaid compensation owed to her. This upset at least one church member, who was under the impression that Mary Morrissey was living off of proceeds from such things as her book and tape sales. Quote, "I got so angry I had to leave," says the now former congregant. Mary has stood up and said so many times that she takes no salary. And then finally, there's a disturbing allegation from a mentally disabled woman who says the Morrisseys swindled her out of $245,000, a nest egg, to get financing for their now scuttled broadcasting venture. As a result of these and other revelations, at least one parishioner has filed a private lawsuit. The State Division of Finance and Corporate Securities has opened a formal securities fraud investigation into New Thought Broadcasting, and the IRS reportedly is not far behind.
Forget everything you had planned for this weekend because you are sitting on your couch and winning from the comfort of your own home. I'm here with SpinQuest, where you can play hundreds of slot games, all of the table games you love, and you could even win real cash prizes. New users, $30 coin packs are on sale for $10 at SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
CODA salutes those who served. Veterans ride free Tuesday, November 11th. And every other day of the year, our veterans and active duty military personnel get a 50% discount on all fares. It's all part of CODA's ongoing commitment to show appreciation for your selfless service. To ride at no cost on fixed routes, tell your bus operator that you're a veteran or use code VET2025 in the app to use CODA Plus. Veterans ride free on Tuesday, November 11th for Veterans Day. Veterans get a 50% discount every day on CODA. Plan your ride and learn more at CODA.com/trip planner.
End. So the self-deprecating or arrogant, I'll let you decide, leader of a megachurch on the brink of ruin then stood in front of her 4,000 plus member congregation and said of her impending scandal about to hit the news and newspapers in the Pacific Northwest. She stated, while perfectly dressed, hair highlighted, teeth white, nails painted, quote, "Following in the steps of Martha Stewart, I am being very careful about not saying what I'm not supposed to say." A joke surely intended to ease the minds of the congregation she'd stolen from. Perhaps she thought if the queen of perfection, Martha Stewart, can survive a financial scandal, so can I. If my followers equate me to someone of Mrs. Stewart's stature, surely we can sweep this multi-million dollar scandal under the rug, right? After all, I have helped these people who are former heads of Nike, lawyers, doctors, powerful people, enrich their spiritual lives, Surely they must understand. You don't have great success without a few financial hiccups, even if they are up to $20 million deep. And by God, they must always remember I am buddies with the Dalai Lama. I have Wayne Dyer on speed dial. That technically makes me 1 degree away of separation from Oprah, and who doesn't love Oprah? This will all work out, and frankly, besides a few month exile, it did, for the poised prophet of positive thinking. Here's her, in her own words, describing the godlike revelation that came to her in her darkest hour. Not to mention, by the way, how she initially took accountability kind of towards her congregants, but then in her new life as a personal development coach, she claims she was betrayed by her ex-husband and partner in crime, Edward Morsi. And you see, he was the only one who misappropriated funds. She was none the wiser. Sure, Mary. Sure.
I'm going to share a personal story here. I went through a very, very difficult time in my life. I opened a piece of mail and I discovered that there was money missing from the church that I had founded and led for 23 years. I found that there was mismanagement from the person I trusted most, who was very involved in that. I learned that there had been lies. I learned all kinds of things. And by the time I found out and my board found out, it was too late to save the work that I had built. We had to close the whole thing down. There was such distrust and all kinds of things, and I ended up losing the work I had built, losing my marriage, because the man I had trusted most was at the head of that, made decisions that I had no awareness of and no control over. I lost the house I lived in. It was a bankruptcy. This is in 2003 and 4. There were several million dollars of debt due to the congregants who had loaned money to buy the facility we were operating out of. And rather than bankrupt the whole thing, I decided to pay back those congregants or spend the rest of my life attempting to. I had no idea. When you talk about rocky times or dark times or difficult times, I was looking at no job, no business, no marriage, no house, and millions of dollars that I had agreed to repay. And I had no idea how to do that. And I also had trashed reputation because the reporting that went on in the community where I lived, in the state I'd grown up in, I went from being on the front page of the Oregonian as Mary with the Dalai Lama, Mary at the United Nations, Mary doing a PBS special, different things that we were doing in the community, habitat houses and different things that the community I served and led were amazing. They were doing amazing things, and so were we. And it was all gone within weeks, literally. And so now I've got millions of dollars of debt and no job, trash reputation. And I just think I've just got to walk the beach today. I mean, I woke up on a Sunday morning. I'd always gotten up, gone early, given my message, and it was no place to go that day. And the last broadcast that was broadcasting all over the Northwest would be broadcast that day. I went downstairs, sat down, had some tea, and I watched that last broadcast. And while I hated that I had to say it was all over, I hated where I was in my life at that point, I was proud of how I delivered that last message, given the condition I found myself in. And after about 5 weeks, one day I'm walking the beach and I hear inside myself, "You're still breathing." And I was so happy to hear from that voice that many of us know that is inside of us. It's a voice of calm. It's a voice of peace. It's never frantic. It's never critical. It's that voice, that true voice. "You're still breathing." And then I heard, "Dark chapter, not your whole book." And I was the first thought I had is I could write, I could create new work. I loved what I was doing in helping people. And if I created new work, I had a hope of helping repay all the people. If I created a new work, I had no idea what that would mean or how that would do. It was the first thought I had that this is a dark chapter, but it doesn't have to be my whole book. We have dark chapters we're dealing with. So dark chapter, not your whole book. And then I heard right behind that, "So what did he do on Saturday?" And that voice speaks to each one of us in a language we can understand. What did he do on Saturday? And as a minister of a non-denominational church, I had delivered 23 Good Friday meditation services. I had delivered 23 in 23 years, Easter sunrise and Easter daytime celebration services. And I had never once asked the question, Friday's the crucifixion, Sunday's the resurrection, what happens on Saturday? What happens on Saturday? And I realized I was in a Saturday. The old life was gone. The new life had not yet emerged. And I was in that in-between zone between a life I had had and a life that would come forth if I led myself across the chasm of that unknown place. And I decided I want to do Saturday really well. I want to learn how to do Saturday really well. And within a short amount of time, my friends, Wayne Dyer, Marion Williamson, Les Brown, Gay Hendricks, others who knew me, and many, Bob Proctor, majorly, and others, Michael Beckwith, invited me. They were inviting me to their stages. They knew who I was. They knew deep down who I was, regardless of what the newspapers were saying. And over time, I began to build again, and I decided to build, instead of a nonprofit work, a profit-making work, so that I could touch more people, reach more people, and also have an opportunity to build and pay something monthly on that. Just, you know, when I first figured out, all right, I'm going to pay 15 cents on the dollar that comes my way. I've got millions of dollars. This is in, when I tell you a tool called do the thing you can do with what you have. Start where you are.
There's been no updated report of where she stands with repaying the $10.7 million restitution fund. But as of June 2007, Mary had only paid $60,000 of that debt. According to an Oregon Live article, it says, quote, Mary is restarting her life as a roving inspirational speaker. She is spending 5 or 6 days a week on the road, traveling across the country to various engagements, generating a six-figure income. The charismatic 58-year-old has been less successful in repaying, though, the $10.7 million she borrowed from her former flock. More than 2 years since she signed a consent agreement with state securities regulators, Morrissey has paid just $60,000 into a restitution fund. At that rate, it will take her more than 300 years to repay the full debt. Yet Mary is thriving in her new life, while her ex-husband, who she maintains caused all of this, went to prison for a bit, then started working at a local bar, and at the time of another early 2000 article, had repaid just $250. In a weird way, I kind of want to side with the ex-husband. I mean, she blames him completely, then comes out likely a millionaire. She definitely is. And he's left clawing his way back to a normal life. I wonder if she just expects that people are not going to Google her past, but merely watch her life coaching videos where she washes over and blames anyone and anything but herself for her darkest hour. But she's still at it and charging upwards of $30,000 for a coaching program. Funny how that works out. But her abandoned compound creaks with an eerie energy and a haunted vibe. Locals say the place has ghosts lurking in the darkness. Here are a few hauntings we found online describing people's encounters from the Living Enrichment Center.
This story's from the creepy thread on Reddit, posted by Efendil 11 years ago. Thanks for sharing. These pictures taken by a friend of mine are what was known as the Living Enrichment Center, a retreat for a New Thought church group in Hillsboro, Oregon. However, before that, it was the medical sister site to the Damish State Mental Hospital, which was located on an adjacent lot. After damage closed, the site was bought by Mary Morrissey, founder of the church. After a little over a decade of operation, Morrissey and her husband were caught in a $10.7 million scandal. Since 2004, it turned into a vagrant's wet dream and a meth head's Walmart, and slowly but surely got destroyed after time. These pictures were taken during the day, which gives you an idea of how huge this place was. There was an underground tunnel running from the engineering portion of the grounds to the main power room. The tunnel, like any other subterranean feature, stretched for nearly an eighth of a mile and was pitch black during the day. The tunnel had two directions, though, one to navigate the grounds to the main building, and the other direction leading directly to the basement of Dimash. After the grounds were bought by the Villiebos Housing Company, Dimash was torn down, and rather quickly, I might add, turned into something akin to a mega complex of housing and apartments. The tunnel was sealed off with debris. Quite a few strange things happened when we visited the LEC. I'd never gone during the day due to risk of getting caught trespassing, and the fact that we generally carried weapons in case there were any unruly tenants or wildlife abound when we ventured into the dark, silent forest in the back lot of it. Among a few events which come to pass, the creepiest part was the transition from dead silence, save for the wind, to loud crashes and or muffled screaming. We usually took it with a grain of salt, as we weren't always the only visitors to the site. However, we got into the habit of immediately chasing down any noises we heard in whichever direction, only to find nothing. Notably, nothing that could have made a loud noise. Other notable incidents were things randomly falling over in front of us. Again, we started off thinking cunt face A and cunt face B are trying to be funny. But these things happened when no one else was on the grounds. And believe me, we checked thoroughly. The final most memorable part of the LEC was the swirling darkness and the drive up. The boonies of Wilsonville, Oregon is quite desolate in places, with naught but forest and a narrow winding road. Whenever we were driving up past the old Dimash site, to the LEC portion, we always, always noticed a distinct drop in temperature. Even in the heat of summer, patches of fog would appear and disappear on the road while we were driving, something so thick that we were forced to slow down. The swirling darkness took the cake, however. Roof access was available through a set of stairs, and no matter which direction you looked in the forest, on, in the grounds, the darkness out there never, ever stood still, as though it was teeming with life and watching every move you were making. I'd stare at it so long that I'd lose track of time. I'd be waiting for something to move out of the darkness. Something I'm confident I didn't want to see. Fortunately, that never happened. The LEC has since been torn down, and I'm sure converted into more apartments and housing. I can't, for the fucking life of me, imagine actually living out of that area and retaining my sanity. This is a story from Mr. Deagle, or M.R. Deagle, not exactly sure, from November 19th, 2009, on yourghoststories.com. We already know about the Living Enrichment Center and its deterioration and downfall, and Mary Morrissey's story, so I'm going to cut right to the chase. The author and a friend named Alex had been searching around the LEC to get into the underground tunnels they had heard about. And after thoroughly searching, they finally found the tunnel they were looking for. I could tell immediately that this tunnel was different. Air gently passed through the tunnel, coming from the other end. While this tunnel seemed longer than the last one we'd found, it was definitely narrower. I had to walk directly behind Alex, and I couldn't really see over his shoulders very well. At the beginning, I was glad he had gone first, but after a few minutes, I was regretting it. I had nothing but darkness stretching endlessly behind me. I kept turning around to shine the light behind me, but after a while, my flashlight couldn't reach the end. We must have walked for 10 minutes or so, when Alex started to get a little nervous. He shakily asked me if we were getting close to the end, and I said I didn't know. It was so cool and dry inside the tunnel. A soft breeze was constantly flowing through the opposite end. I looked behind us again and saw nothing but darkness. It was the same ahead of us. I looked at the thick pipes that stretched as far as we could see, and there was a huge pressure gauge embedded within. I looked at the needle, which was displaying no pressure. It was then I first heard the noise. It sounded like somebody was shuffling their feet. It echoed towards us from the end we came from originally. I thought it was Alex, but it was coming from behind us. I shined my light and I saw nothing. The shuffle became rhythmic footsteps, then started to sound like heavy footfalls. It sounded like someone was coming towards us. Instinctively, I shoved Alex from behind. "Let's go," I said frantically, and we both started to run. Our heavy breaths and footsteps drowned out the other sounds quickly. We ran for what seemed like forever until we reached a T-shaped intersection. From the left, we could see sunlight a bit further ahead, and the right was black. We waited a few moments to listen for anything. We were both panting, but trying to not make any noise. Suddenly, Alex grabbed my arm, put his other hand over my mouth. We could hear distant footsteps again. This time sporadically, like someone creeping or limping along. After 3 or 4 slow steps, I heard someone say, "Shh," from the darkness. I thought I was going into shock. I was flooded with adrenaline. We turned and ran to the left, towards the sunlight. We found a concrete staircase that led to a dilapidated outbuilding on the edge of the LEC property, in the woods. We emerged into the bright afternoon. Even in broad daylight, I could feel myself shaking with fear. We waited for 15 minutes for someone to come out of the tunnel, but nobody ever came out. We even came back to the exit and shouted into the tunnel, which yielded no response. On the way home, we debated the chance that someone else was in there with us, but it seemed very unlikely. I have read about squatters and tweakers taking refuge in the LEC. But after being there, searching for a couple hours, we saw no evidence of anyone being there.
Thank you guys so much for listening. And if you're enjoying the show, please leave a 5-star rating and positive review wherever you listen. And I hope you're enjoying spooky season. Next week, back to the normal programming.
Forget whatever plans you have this weekend because you're staying at home and playing on SpinQuest. And there's never been a better time to sign up than right now. New users get $30 coin packs for just $10. All the table games you love with hundreds of slot games and real cash prizes. That's at SpinQuest.com. SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
It's almost Election Day, Central Ohio, and your voice matters. On Tuesday, November 4th, COTA is making it easier to get to the polls with free rides all day long on all services. No fare, no hassle. Just hop on board on Tuesday, November 4th for an easy way to cast your vote. Whether you're taking the bus, COTA Mainstream, or COTA Plus, your ride is on us. Let's roll to the polls together. Plan your trip on the transit app or at COTA.com.